This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
There are few things more satisfying than when an event lives up to the hype. And boy, did we have that last night. We'll talk Iowa LSU. We'll talk men's Final Four. And of course, we'll talk plenty of NFL, because that is what we do here on the Lombardi Line, as we welcome you in on a Tuesday. This show, as always, presented by DraftKings alongside Michael Lombardi, former NFL executive, author. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We've got a great show ahead today, Michael, following up what was a great night in women's college hoops. And yes, that's how we're leading the show today, because the entire nation is talking about that performance and what Caitlin Clark did on the big stage.
You know, it's remarkable the power of sports, Stormy. It's remarkable about how teams can capture a country. You know, we saw this, a little movie about these high school kids in Milan, Indiana, which became Hickory, and the movie Hoosiers, and how it just is the number one sports movie in America, and it's about some small town in Indiana. And it captures us, because there's a sense of we're rooting for the underdog, and Iowa and Caitlin Clark and her ability to come out of nowhere, been rejected by UConn, and raising her level of play, to me, is what makes it such a powerful story. I can't help but think, Stormy, about something Pat Riley once said. Pat Riley was been the head coach of the Miami Heat. And one day he brought in a 2x4 into the locker room, and he set it on the ground. It was 12 feet long, 2x4. I guess that's what they make. I don't know. I don't do any of that work, so I have no idea how to buy that, but he did. Anyway, so Riley has a team sit down, and Riley gets on top of the 2x4 and starts walking across it. And the players all look at him like, what's the big deal? He said, there is no big deal when it's on the floor. But when we put it up 20 feet, it becomes a big deal. And you got to raise your level of play when it goes up there. And that's exactly what we saw last night. She raised her level of play. She walked across the plank as if it was no big deal. And I think we all loved it. And we all loved the back and forth that was going on in the game. I mean, look, LSU didn't quit. They were trying. They just didn't have enough gas in the tank.
Yeah, and Angel Reese was awesome early. It felt like she was never the same after that early second quarter ankle injury. And then later, she has that rough charge call that, if the game wasn't already put away, it certainly was when she had to walk off of the court. But yes, give credit to LSU. They fought. But to your point about Caitlin Clark, in a night where you knew every single eyeball was going to be watching this game. If you watch sports, you're watching this game yesterday. The amount of pressure, carrying the weight of her team. She was so comfortable in the moment against a really tough team like that. And we talked to Thomas Gable on the program yesterday that he anticipated this would be the biggest handle ever for a women's game. Johnny Avello, director of the sportsbook at DraftKings, confirmed that with us via text this morning, that this set a new record. The UConn-USC game actually is the third highest betting handle that they have ever had. The second was the Big Ten Tournament Championship game that also involved Caitlin Clark. So Caitlin Clark now has two of the top three highest bet games ever. And Avello also told us that he anticipates another record to be set or broken coming up when Iowa has to play UConn. And to give a little betting perspective on how things played out yesterday, Iowa was bet up from a 1.5 point favorite to 2.5 at closing. Ends up being no sweat. Final score, 94-87. Total goes over 166.5. But if you bet any Caitlin Clark props, which 70% of the betting public did bet the over on all of them, you cashed in like crazy. Over 31.5 points. Check. Alt over 40 points. Plus 375. Check. Over 5.5 three-pointers. She hits 9 to hit a tournament record. Even goes over the alternate threes prop. Over 9.5 assists. She has 12. Over 6.5 rebounds. She gets you there with 7. Mitch Moss of Follow the Money tweeted, her props were priced like Luka or playoff LeBron in his prime, and she soared over every single one. One for the ages. Kim Mulkey, head coach of the LSU Tigers. She agrees. Felt similarly. Here is the LSU head coach after the game.
She's just a generational player, and she just makes everybody around her better. That's what the great ones do. I think they had a kid that scored 21 and 18. She had 12 assists. Caitlin Clark's not going to beat you by herself. It's what she does to make those other teammates better that helps her score points and them score points to beat you. What did I say to her? I said, I sure am glad you're leaving.
She summed that up pretty well, Michael.
Yeah. And she does make everybody better. And that's what great players do. That's why when we keep constantly making excuses for players, well, if they had better receivers, well, if they had this. No, no. Great players make other players better. I mean, that's the reality of it. I mean, Brady won all those Super Bowls. It's hard to remember who the receivers were. Edelman was a very good receiver. But my point is the game gets – everybody's game rises. That 2x4 goes up into the air, and it helps people walk across it. And that's what we saw. And that's what we love about it, right? Mm-hmm. It's teamwork, the assist, right? I mean, sometimes when he makes some shots, Stormy. She makes some shots that I just shake. I'm sitting on the couch watching it with Millie. I'm like, that's a really hard shot. Going to your left, shooting a three-pointer, and drilling it without even touching the net. I mean, it's remarkable. Her eye-hand coordination is just like, whoa. Her ability to control the basketball, her vision. She has those things that it's hard to understand, but great players just seem to all have that. And that competitive stamina that she exhibits every single time on the court is remarkable. I thought LSU would press her, try to make her work harder just to get the ball up the court, but they didn't.
Yeah, I felt for LSU's Haley Van Lith, who RIP her mentions today on social media. I'm sure that she's not feeling too great based on what came out of that game. But that was such a mismatch from the jump in that game. And it was weird listening to Rebecca Lobo on the broadcast saying that typically for LSU, Flaje Johnson always takes the hardest defensive assignment. So it should have been her on Caitlin Clark. And they didn't make that adjustment until more than midway through the final quarter of this game. Didn't make any sense for such a great coach and Kim Mulkey to make that decision. But that's how things played out. Iowa's 94 points are the most allowed by a Kim Mulkey team in a non-overtime game in her head coaching career. Caitlin Clark, we talk about not only the scoring, but the creating. She scored or assisted on 67 of the 94, absolutely controlled the game. And now we go from Caitlin Clark, who Iowa had only made one Final Four prior to Clark's arrival in 1993. They're now going back to back to a team in UConn who they face next, who's headed to their 23rd Final Four. So what a game that's going to be.
It's unbelievable. I mean, UConn is the center of the basketball world, isn't it? I mean, it's really kind of remarkable. And everybody was thinking this was going to be a down year for Geno and his team and Paige Booker's team. And they come back and beat the number one seed in Los Angeles, which was somewhat remarkable, right?
Yep.
And they're playing their best basketball of the season. So, look, this women's game is really – it's fun to watch. And having been a part of it through my life with Al Davis and having to learn all about it because he loved it so much, I think it's gotten better than it was when I did watch it at one time when, you know, when Oklahoma's women basketball team was dominating and, you know, the other, and of course, Geno at UConn. But I think it's just been so much fun to watch. And again, it's even for the books, it's great because now there's more attention and people are willing to bet it because they see with the game and they can handicap the game as they look at it.
Yeah, no question. Paige Beckers had 28 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists. Juju Watkins on the other side for USC set a national scoring record for freshmen, a record that stood since the 80s. Could not get the win as UConn wins and covers the 3.5. Total goes over 135.5, 80-73 the final. That matchup with UConn and Iowa coming up on Friday, Iowa laying 2.5. Total 183. Last couple minutes here, Michael. Let's get to what we do here on this program, which is talk about the NFL, because a very interesting move got made. And I know typically we don't usually lead with headlines about backup quarterbacks, but this one is one that piques the eyebrows a little bit and grabs your attention, that the Kansas City Chiefs, the defending Super Bowl champs, have signed a new backup quarterback in Carson Wentz to a one-year deal. What was your first thought when you heard that?
I thought classic Andy Reid. You know, Andy Reid is the Warren Buffett, you know, a little bit like what Belichick would do, buy low on value and see if we can increase the value and sell it off. I mean, Andy's sitting in his office knowing that there's going to probably be 5, if not 6 quarterbacks drafted in the first round. And in the most ideal circumstances, there's never 6 good quarterbacks in any draft. Forget about round 1 through round 7. So the likelihood that these teams are going to hit, all 6 that pick quarterbacks are going to hit, is pretty remote. It would be about as remote as Caitlin Clark being held under 20 points, right? It's just not going to happen. So if he can dress up Wentz, make him look good, right? You know, maybe there's value in Wentz out there in the marketplace. And I think that's what he's trying to do. Gives him somebody that he feels like has played in big games, right? You know, I mean, the guy was going to be the MVP of the league in 2017 if he doesn't blow out his knee in Los Angeles against the Rams. And of course, the next play, they call another run in with a blown out knee and he scores a touchdown. But the reality, I think it's a smart move for him. It gives him, he's played better as a professional than Blaine Gabbert ever did, yeah. Right? He's played better as a professional than Chase Daniels ever did. And Andy's had those guys, or even the kid from Michigan, I forget his name now, but the backup there, Chad Henne. I mean, he's played better than him as a pro. So I think it's a smart move. Buy low, see if you could restore him. I mean, look, it's what the Bucs did last year with Baker Mayfield. I mean, Baker Mayfield wasn't any better in Los Angeles than he was in Carolina, and yet the Bucs took a chance on him and coached him. I think it proves the point here, and I know we're going to go to break here in a second, but there's so much about the marriage between the coach and the quarterback that we overlook in the evaluation process.
Also good to note, J.K. Dobbins set to visit the team today. He's coming off a torn Achilles the first week of the 2023 season. And for those wondering about the latest on the Rashee Rice situation, reportedly he is cooperating with authorities in the Dallas car racing crash investigation. Still a lot more to uncover as it pertains to the young Chiefs wideout. We're going to hit the break here when we come back, continuing to dive into some NFL news. But is it news or is it noise? Michael Lombardi will help us decipher it all.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't already, make sure you check out the new and improved VSiN.com. A new look, but same great content, including best bets from all of our show hosts and experts, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, betting guides. And speaking of those articles, our own Michael Lombardi's got a fresh column out on the website diving into Trevor Lawrence. Is it now or never for the Jags quarterback? We'll get into that plenty a little bit later on in the show. But make sure you check it all out at VSiN.com today.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
All right, Michael, let's do it. Today's the first day that teams with new coaches can begin their offseason programs. The Falcons, Chargers, and Commanders all be getting that portion of the calendar today. Why is this a news or noise? Because I'm curious, how important is this time of year for coaches and teams as they get acclimated? And is this something that fans should be paying attention to, or just another day on the calendar? So news or noise, Michael?
I mean, it's more noise than news, right? And so really, it's really for the coaches to kind of see the players, see their work habits. But nobody's ever really done anything in the offseason program except for preparation. You can't really judge the talent because there's been so many times where a guy has not had a great offseason and then he's come to camp and he's been really good. So you're not playing any football. But what you're trying to do is establish the culture. If you're Jim Harbaugh, you're trying to build a culture. You need your best players there to help you, but you're trying to build your culture, which doesn't make it news. It makes it more noise. But from what we'll see is you can make mistakes in the evaluation process more than you can actually count on anything that you do.
That's a great point. And Harbaugh, by the way, a favorite to win Coach of the Year this season. Everything in the offseason program, the 9-week program, all voluntary with the exception of one mandatory minicamp during phase 3 of the offseason. Let's go out to the Big D, the Dallas Cowboys, and former star running back turned backup Ezekiel Elliott. Apparently, Michael, they are open to a possible reunion. News or noise that Zeke could eat again with a star on his helmet?
Well, I think it is news, but I don't think it's going to be news that moves the needle in the favor of the Cowboys. Look, I didn't think Zeke was completely bad last year. I think he's an inside the tackle runner, but he gave them power where Pollard didn't have it. And I think ultimately the Cowboys are going to need. Now, maybe it's Deuce Vaughn that they're counting on, right? Maybe he could be that loose playback, that Darren Sproles guy that you know, has the ability to really impact the game in a lot of different ways with the ball in his hands, because he was dynamic in college. There's no question. And if they're going down that direction with Deuce Vaughn, which I don't know if they are, then you need a power back. You need somebody to come in and take some of the third down runs and the short yardage plays off his hands. So it is news. It's not going to make me believe the Cowboys are going over their 10.5 win total, though.
Coming off a one-year deal with the Patriots at a team-high 642 yards, 3 touchdowns in 7 seasons with Dallas, Zeke did run for over 1,000 yards in 4 of them. The Cowboys set at 10.5 wins this year, plus 125 favorite to win the NFC East for the second straight year. Let's go to the quarterback position, where amid all of the quarterback room additions in Cleveland, high-priced starter Deshaun Watson, who's coming off a season-ending shoulder surgery, shared an update on his progress. Let's hear from Deshaun.
Situation good, man. We're in a great spot, right where we need to be, right on track. We got, you know, plenty of time to wrap up the throwing sessions and things like that, but everything been going pretty smooth, man. So, you know, along with the I'm feeling well, and the doctors and the PTs and everyone on the same page, we are in a good spot.
That sound from the QB Unplugged podcast. News or noise, Michael, that Deshaun Watson's in a great spot, right on target?
Well, I think it is news that he's healthy, because you have to wonder why they have 4 quarterbacks that they all guarantee the money to, with the exception of Dorian Thompson Robinson. I mean, he's under rookie contract, so that separates him. But to me, you've got to be careful about a quarterback coming off shoulder injury. You want to make sure that he can get through camp. It's a big year. Look, their number's 8.5 on the over-under total, which is, to me, really small, because I think they've improved their team in the offseason. And as we all know, the draft isn't going to be the reason a team moves their number. It could be if they draft the right quarterback, but that's a whole other issue. But I think this Brown team, what they're saying to us is, by setting that number at 8.5, is I don't think anybody believes in Deshaun that he can get back to a level. We're not even sure what that level is, because the level that I remember him in Houston with Will Fuller throwing the ball in the third level, making plays, winning games for them, I haven't seen in Cleveland since he's been there, frankly.
The best game of football we saw from Deshaun Watson was the game he got injured and ended his season. He is 60-1 in the MVP market. The Browns 6-1 in the AFC North. Let's go to the favorite in that division at plus 115, the Baltimore Ravens, who remade their offense last year under offensive coordinator Todd Monken. Things went well enough that they were a top seed and made it all the way to the AFC Conference Championship. Lamar Jackson also wins MVP, yet John Harbaugh said there's no doubt things are going to look different than they did in 2023. News or noise?
That's news. And it has to look different, right? What have we been saying on the show, Stormy, for a while? That if they signed Derrick Henry and paid him, they can't be an offset shotgun. Henry's not a good offset shotgun back. I mean, you're not going to just stand there and RPO with Henry. You can do it. But Henry's a back who needs to be deep in the formation, read the outside shoulder of the tackle or the outside shoulder of the tight end, read the outside shoulder of the guard, either run inside or outside zone, and let him go and let him build momentum and try to break tackles. That requires you to be under center. Maybe they'll probably fudge it a little bit and being in the pistol, but that's not as good as being in the under center. I think you're going to see Lamar more under center, because if you're going to play Henry, that's when he's at his best. You're not going to sit there and give Henry the ball at 6 yards where the quarterback is and then expect him to get going. I mean, he takes a little bit of time to get himself going. Now, once he gets going, he's hard to tackle.
Sure, Michael. My big reaction when I saw that comment was, I mean, the offense was great last year overall. The only thing I think needs to look different was the play calling in the most critical game of the entire season. Why you go away from the thing that got you there in the first place?
Exactly right. And you can't lose your identity in the biggest game of the year. You just can't. You know, you're there. It would be like Iowa not trying to get the ball to Caitlin Clark. It would be like, you know, Patrick Mahomes handing the ball off every play. Like, it's just, that's not your identity. You have to be who you are. And the great teams basically say to their opponent, we're going to snap this ball and you know what's coming. You just got to stop it. And for some reason, the Ravens panic. They get behind in a game and there's, oh my God, we're going to panic. I mean, frankly, if you asked every Chief player what was a harder game, the Raven game or the Bills game, I think that they would easily say, oh, by far, the Bills game. We were lucky to win that one.
No question about it. Now, I know how much you love talking about the New York Jets, the Ifers, because if they stay healthy, this happens, then the Jets could have success. But it's a big if, it's a big question. And Robert Saleh was talking about one of those ifs in their new star wide receiver that they acquired this offseason, Mike Williams, saying that he has a long way to go in his ACL recovery, but they are confident he'll be ready for week one if he does everything right. Michael, news or noise?
I think that's news. I mean, he's admitting he's not ready to go. And usually coaches err on the side of you know, optimism. And I think this is news. Look, here's the question. Everybody says cleared to play, Stormy. He's cleared to go. Well, is he cleared to be the player he was in 17? Is that who we're getting? Or we're getting the player in 21? I mean, if you look at the numbers, he has gone down in yards per attempt every single year significantly. And it isn't because he don't have a quarterback, because he's got a guy that'll throw it down the field. I mean, he's not playing with somebody who wants to check it down. So what are we getting from Mike Williams? What version off this knee injury and all these injuries are we going to get? I think that's a fair question to ask.
Now, what version of Mike Williams will we get? What version of Aaron Rodgers, who's going to be 40 years old, coming off an Achilles, are we going to get? That's why we call them the ifers, because there are so many ifs and questions.
Ifers.
It's a very compact AFC East in terms of the odds board. The Bills, a plus 140 favorite to repeat. The Dolphins, plus 215. The Jets, plus 220. And then the Patriots, obviously, the long odds there, 25-1. Let's go to the NFC West, where 49ers quarterback Brock Purdy, Michael, was among the top 25 players receiving performance-based pay bumps. He basically doubled his salary here. News or noise?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's news. I don't understand how he wasn't the highest paid guy. I mean, I don't know how he didn't become the most, you know, like, what more does he have to do to get more money? Like, I like to figure that out. That was my first reaction, Stormy. Like, I mean, who played better than him in all the games that he played in? It was because he didn't start all 17 games? Is that what it was?
I don't know what it is, but that's Michael. That's supposed to be your element. I don't know this side of the business like you do.
Well, I don't know that calculation either. I know that, and that, you know, that's a bonus added. It doesn't come out of the cap. That comes out of a dip. So the teams don't have to pay that. That doesn't come out of your cap. That's not likely to be earned or incentives. That's something a league office has come up with through the collective bargaining agreement, which I'm all in favor of. Don't get me wrong. But my first reaction was, how in the hell isn't he the leader in the clubhouse by a lot?
Good for him, though, that he gets a bump because the team can't pay him for another year, although it's been nice to hear Jed York's belief that he is their franchise quarterback and that when the time comes to pay him, they will be excited to do so. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, VSiN Zone, Will Hill is going to join us, get into some more hoops talk and potentially MLB. Who knows with Will Hill? He's always surprising us.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Remember, for a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free when you sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action, find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets, and where the money doesn't match that public opinion. And you can do that for not just today's games, but future action as well. Take advantage of this limited time offer. VSiN.com/splits is how you can get your free 2 week access to our VSiN betting splits page. VSiN.com/splits. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we get into a little college hoops talk with VSiN's own Will Hill on the Progressive Guest Line. You can also find him with the Shoulda Bet More podcast. You can download wherever you get your podcast, the Bear Bets Pod with Chris Felica as well in that gambling group chat. But the question is, can Will Hill cash as many tickets as Caitlin Clark did yesterday for the public? What you got today, Will? Welcome into the show.
What's going on? Yeah, a lot going on. Baseball's back. Women's Final Four, men's Final Four. I'm curious because I saw Embiid is coming back for the Sixers. Lombardi, will you be going to the parade in a couple of months?
Well, I'll be. Yeah, I mean, I can't wait to see there. So I'm sure somebody will have to. He'll have a walking cane to get him up and down the parade route because I'm sure he's in perfect condition. But don't get me started on that. You want to be able to talk in this block. I don't need to talk. I mean, this is everything that is wrapped up into what being a Sixer fan is. He's coming back. Oh, yeah, I can't wait. And he's been working hard. And they all said it on April Fool's Day.
Leave it at that. Yeah, of course. I actually joked with Michael on the program yesterday, Will. I was like, this I believe is not actually an April Fool's joke. This is reality. He's like, oh, it's a joke to me. So there we go. We can talk about Joel Embiid a little bit later. But Will, first, when we were in the commercial break and we were talking about the women's tournament, you said you have some takes. Hit us with it. What you got?
Well, first of all, from a betting standpoint, it'll be interesting. I can't see the Connecticut numbers here because Connecticut schools, you can't bet in Connecticut. So I don't know if the Caitlin Clark points prop is up yet. Well, they're going to dare you to bet the under, sort of like with the UConn men, how they're daring you to bet the other team. I would actually, depending on what it is, maybe look to an under because I think Oriema's, look, he's got a little Belichick in him. He's tough. He's obviously a great coach, the all-time great coach. I would think he's going to come into the game and say, you know what? Somebody else is beating us. If we lose, it's not going to be Clark just bombing him away with not a hand in her face. So maybe a Clark under will be interesting. And I will say this, Angel Reese last night, 7 of 21 from the floor, 3 of 8 from the foul line. If this, and I watched every play of the game, I enjoyed it. If that sport is going to get to a spot where it wants to get to, you have to be able to criticize the players a little bit. After the game, the worldwide leader was like, oh, 10 straight double doubles for Angel Reese. When R.J. Davis and Caleb Love went 0-18 from three, everybody killed them. Like if Purdue lost to Utah State, everybody would kill them. Like you got to be able to criticize the players a little bit too, to if you want to get your sport where it's going.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. But you know, I mean, it's like that's not what they do. So I don't know why you would expect it from the worldwide leader. I mean, it's just all propaganda that they want to talk about. So life moves on. But I think. The analyzation of the game, right? I think you're right. I think Geno is too smart. I thought West Virginia did a really good job on Caitlin Clark in the opening round where they denied her the ball. They made her work to bring it up the court. And I didn't think LSU did that. I thought LSU was just going to, like, if I were coaching against Caitlin Clark, everything she did would be hard. You know, I would have somebody in front of her bringing the ball up the court. I would be trying to trap her, get the ball out of her hands, try to do something to where it disrupts their flow of the game. And I thought LSU just allowed them to get into the flow of the game.
And maybe just attack her on the other end where you just try and hopefully get a good whistle and get her into foul trouble. If nothing else, make her work on defense where she's tired out because, I mean, it's you got to cut off the head of the snake somehow. Either get her in foul trouble, tire her out. Like if she's going to sit there and just bomb them in from the logo uncontested, you're going home anyway. So I don't know. It's a fun Final Four from both the men and the women.
Yeah, and maybe don't go behind screens when you're defending her and start defending her as soon as she crosses half court. There are a lot of things that you could do that would make life easier on you if you're playing against them.
Well, it was clear they were trying to make her go left, but when she goes left, she can go into that little step back and look, it's not like it's easy to defend her, but yeah, they were, I didn't think they'd do a great job.
She can shoot from anywhere on the court. It's ridiculous. Yes.
Anywhere.
Will Hill joining us.
And I don't think you can get her in foul trouble. They play that zone. She kind of sags in there. She doesn't really like react to it. I mean, she's kind of playing passing lanes. She's not putting herself out. I mean, I think not that she takes plays off, but I think she reserves her energy for the offensive end and she's smart. So I agree, Stormy. I think you got to go, you got to kind of attack her.
Iowa laying 2.5 points against UConn coming up on Friday. And no, Will, to your point, I have not seen the props come out just yet. You do have some action today, though, in the NIT, which we love. It is semifinal Tuesday here. And you have a wager in the Seton Hall, Georgia game. What are you looking at?
Yeah, I got bets in both of them. Come
Let's
on,
go.
NIT Final
Let's
Four.
Go.
Let's do it. I like the under first half, 68.5. Both these teams play a lot of isolation on offense. I think we're looking at longer possessions, fewer possessions. Both teams defend. You know, Shaheen Holloway from his run at St. Peter's, his teams defend like hell. They defend the rim. So I think we're looking at sort of a grimy, ugly game, an ugly start. I don't like getting involved with the full game under because you get fouls the overtime. I can't get involved. But sometimes there's a little feeling out process, especially a strange gym. Now, this isn't Hinkle Fieldhouse, which I think plays into both these games. That's where Butler plays. So Seton Hall plays there every year. Maybe they have a little more familiarity. Maybe that goes into your handicap, or maybe they're a little more comfortable, you know, with the shooting, with the backdrop. I think they're the better team anyway, but I'm going to go under 68.5 first half.
Yeah, I mean, what I don't think people understand about Seton Hall, Will, is they're one of the teams that actually beat Connecticut this year. You know, they're just
Handily
just because
too.
They're in the NIT doesn't mean they're not a – huh?
Handily, too. They beat them comfortably.
Yeah, no, that's right. So I think to me, you know, I think because they're in the NIT and they didn't get into the big one, I think people tend to think, well, you know, they're not as good. And Georgia's in the Southeast Conference. They're not as good. But no, I think Seton Hall is kind of like everybody's wondering how they did it, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, and I'm sure the committee, and we talked about it after the selection came out, I'm sure if you give them a do-over, if you get a different committee in there, Virginia being in, St. John's being out, Seton Hall being out, they were it wasn't a perfect bracket. We'll leave it at that.
Seton Hall laying 4.5 in that game against the Bulldogs, total 145.5. The other game, the early game of the day, 4 Pacific, 7 Eastern, Utah at Indiana State. Indiana State laying 3.5, total 162.5. What's your approach there?
I like Indiana State. This game is in Indiana at Hinkle, so this is basically going to be a home game. That's a program that hasn't had a lot of success, so motivation here. They're going to want to win this tournament badly. This will mean something to them. And if you look at Utah, they really haven't done much on the road. I think only 3 wins away from home, 1-9 in Pac-12 play on the road, and their one win was 1 point at the buzzer against UCLA, so they have not traveled well. Indiana State's going to be home. They're going to be comfortable, and their offense is really fun to watch. If anyone, you know, it's not doing anything tonight and has, you know, 10 or 15 minutes to watch something, their offense is worth watching. They're a fun team. So I think their offense is enough to get it done. I'll lay the points here with Indiana State.
And then let's go to the big one. Let's go to the, let's get it. Cause we're not going to talk to you before the big one. So Purdue, you know, you're going to lay the points with Purdue and kind of stare that NC State Storm right in the eye and not blink.
Yeah, this is a tough one. It's always tough in betting, knowing when to get off, because it's not like I've been on the on this team the whole time. Obviously, I wouldn't be sitting here if I was. I'd be on an island somewhere with all my money. But I did have them against Marquette and against Duke. I thought those lines were a little inflated. I'm going to jump off board here. I just think, obviously, the whistle is so important with Edie. I don't know how you keep Burns out of foul trouble. I don't know how he plays defense without fouling. And if you're going to give the big guy 2-3 fouls early, that's just, he's such a good scorer around the basket. He's such a good passer, an instinctive passer. And I was talking with Jeff Schwartz on the Bear Beds pod last week, and he said, no doubt in his mind, he could play offensive line in the NFL, Burns, with his footwork and everything. But I just think Burns will get into foul trouble. And at the other end, like, how does he get his shot off against Edie? Edie's got a good size advantage. And again, it's sort of like we talk about with Iowa, with the women's team, you cut off the head of the snake, you know, what's the rest of the team look like? I just think this is one where we might see the regular season NC State team. There's a reason, you know, they were losing by 15 to Duke late in the season, and their regular season was what it was. They're probably not as good as they are playing in the tournament, and they're probably not as bad as they were in the regular season. Truth is probably somewhere in between. But look, if Purdue can get Burns into foul trouble and you have to double Edie, and all those 3-point shooters are open, it can get away from NC State. So I would look towards laying it here.
Yeah, a team that lost 14 games in the regular season, but's now won 9 straight elimination games. And while they've been an underdog in 7 of their last 8 games, won all of those outright by an average of 10.5 points per game. So good for them. We'll see if the road ends here against the top seed Purdue Boilermakers. Last one here. Does UConn's reign of dominance continue against Alabama, or can the Tide put up a fight? What do you think?
Oh my goodness. 12 is a lot of points. Now, Bama is not good at not fouling. They foul a lot. They don't offensive rebound. So UConn's going to have some success, especially pick and roll. There's going to be guys open. I just think that 12 is too many points. They have enough 3-point shooters where maybe they can hang in the game. At some point here, UConn's going to be in a close game. Are they really going to steamroll through 2 straight tournaments without anyone putting a glove on them? It's possible. I mean, I wouldn't have thought they did it 10 times. So I'm going to just take the points here. If you can get a 12 with Bama, you figure they make enough threes. And eventually, you know, they're probably going to take 43s in this game. And their path to winning, being competitive, is hitting like 18, 20 of them. So maybe they can do it. How can you feel great about it? But I'll take the points here with Bama.
I don't know, Will. As long as Danny Hurley's got dragon underwear, feels like things are just going to keep going strong. Will Hill, appreciate your time.
That's
as always,
what
buddy.
Illinois said, Stormy. Illinois said, we're going to stay close. We'll just keep launching threes. Yeah, that worked.
Yeah.
I thought it was a glitch in the score bug when I looked up 23-23. Oh, 53-23. That's interesting. Thanks, Will. We're going to hit the break. More Lombardi Line coming up next. Looking at the NFL draft quarterback class, how Michael ranks them.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DK customers. You can earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager, up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings. But you need to use our promo code Lombardi. Don't wait. Download the app now. Use the code Lombardi when you sign up. Earns you a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. right now. We are back here on the Lombardi Line, Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. And we're at this point now, Michael, where it's officially draft month and there's been all this talk about the quarterbacks that you have done your deep dives, your scouting reports personally on each and every one of these quarterbacks. So it's a great time to rank them and decipher the haves from the have-nots. How do you kind of go about your process in determining this list?
Well, I think the first thing you got to do is decide who do you think could be a potential a starter, and then who are potential starters if things go well, and then who do you feel like are more developmental players that are going to take some time. I think you got to grade the players. You know, when you just say a guy's a first rounder, that means nothing, right? And so I think you want to put the players into certain categories and then rank them within that category and keep working on them. And I think when you look over the history of the NFL draft, the quarterback position has been very challenging. I mean, you can draft five in one year like they did in 2021. There's four not only not playing, they're not starting. One's on the brink of maybe not having his the great career that we thought he would. That's Trevor Lawrence. So I think the other thing, too, is this is really a position about fit. And I think the story that's not being talked enough about in this draft is the relationship between J.J. McCarthy and the offense at Michigan, the relationship between Michael Penix and Kaden DeBoer at Indiana and then at Washington, the relationship between Bo Nix at Auburn and then his career at Oregon. And I think that really is the story about evaluating quarterbacks. You can go in and say, this guy isn't very good or this guy can't. It's what are we going to do with the player, right? And I think this is a draft that's highly overvalued at quarterback. I don't know if Caleb Williams is this concept that he's generational is not fair to the kid at all. I think he's got a chance to be a good player, but he needs some things to work on. So what you try to do is grade them, understand what their strengths and weaknesses are, but more importantly is what will allow them to be most successful.
Generational, I feel like, has become a buzzword that we throw around way too cavalier these days. But even with that being said, Michael, as we look to Lombardi's list and we separate the day one starters from the potential starters, the number one guy that you have in this class is still Caleb Williams. Why?
Well, because he has the least amount of problems going into it. Look, he's careless with the football, 30 fumbles, lost the ball. He doesn't do the things that are required of him to be detailed and disciplined at times. But when his skill set can take over, he's dynamic. He can throw the ball. He's got enough arm. He's good on every single level. He can read the progression, and he can throw the ball where he needs to put it in terms of his accuracy. But he's going to have to be grooved in. And I think the bigger challenge isn't the talent of Caleb Williams, is the embracing of coaching for Caleb Williams. Because what we're seeing out of some of these guys is we're getting into this basketball mentality where, like what happens with a lot of these college coaches in basketball, the players are so good, they just want to be one and done and get to the pro and then do their thing. And I think Caleb's going to have to embrace coaching. He's going to have to take coaching and find ways to improve, because I know Lincoln Riley has a reputation for being a quarterback guru, but the reality of it is he was too sloppy in everything he did. And that's got to change, because he won't get away with that in pro football. But if I were picking, I would be more nervous about his relationship with his teammates. If you go back and talk to the people at Oklahoma, you want to find out why he left, what they thought of him. And I think as you build your franchise around him, you got to coach him. And if he doesn't take coaching, that's going to be hard.
Granted, it's been limited face-to-face time, but Matt Eberflus raved about Caleb Williams' interactions with his teammates at the dinner that they all had together at his pro day. And so we'll see if that's real as it translates to the NFL. Had 72 touchdowns and just 10 picks his 2 years at USC. The other player you have as a day one starter is Jaden Daniels. And you talk about Caleb Williams being the ultimate off-script quarterback. Jaden Daniels can do a lot of that as well in his back pocket.
Yeah, no question. And to me, he is the second best quarterback in the draft. I think his tape backs that up in a conference that's very challenging to play. They didn't play great defense. Yes, I know he had great receivers with him, but this kid makes a lot of plays. But also, he's another example of not being as successful with the wrong coach at Arizona State to becoming successful at LSU with the right coaching scheme and the talent around him. So, but he can make plays off script. He can run the ball effectively. You worry about his health. You worry about him handling the pocket and moving vertically north in the pocket and staying clean. But he's got great arm strength. He's got great arm talent. He is not consistent. There's no question. You're going to have to work on some of those. If you think he's going to be a 70% passer on third down, you're wrong. But he's got a chance to make some really big plays. To me, he is exactly what you try to get to in the draft. And then you've got to do a really good job of understanding. You didn't draft the answer. You draft part of the ability to get to the answer. And I think that's the key, right? Most people think when they take a quarterback second overall, they found the answer. No. No, we got to surround the guy with the right players and we got to put him in the right system. That's where I think Daniels goes.
Okay, so Caleb Williams, a minus 4,000 favorite to be the top overall pick. Daniels, minus 150 to go number two, followed by Drake May at minus 105. But in the list, as we go from the day one starters to now the potential starters, you have Michael Penix Jr. listed ahead of Drake May, followed by J.J. McCarthy and Bo Nix. Real quickly, what is the big separator between a guy like Jaden Daniels and a Michael Penix then here? From the day one starter to the potential starter, how big is that gap?
Well, I think that with the Michael Penix thing, I think a lot of it is really system related because Michael Penix is an outstanding, outstanding deep ball thrower. He can throw the football down the field on the third level at a really good rate, right? And I think that can't be overlooked. And when you look at him when he was playing effectively for Indiana, he was doing that. And that gives you something. He's got great size. He can run, right? This is a kid who's made a lot of plays in his career. He's done a lot of incredible things. I mean, he started a lot of games, which is really important. And, you know, he's made some mistakes with the football. I think he's more careless with the ball than Jaden Daniels. He'll take more risk. Of course, he's thrown it up the field quite a bit. You know, when he was at Washington, he averaged 8.6 yards per attempt down the field. That's impressive. Whereas when he was at Indiana and lost out, they're trying to fit the offense around him. He was at 7.3. Big difference. I think we said this on the show yesterday. I think the old Raider teams, the down-the-field throw teams, would really appreciate him. I think Michael would be very good in the Rams offense. Up-the-field throws, trying to get the ball on over routes, things that he does really well and utilize his skill as a runner. Again, durability is going to be a concern here. He's coming off of injuries, right? Remember, he only played 21 games at Indiana before he left. And then he started 28 games in Washington in two seasons. So that concerns you. But to me, I think he's got a lot to like about his game. Yeah. I think Drake May has a lot to like about his game, Stormy. But it's just so inconsistent. It's so raw. It's going to take somebody to chisel the perfect player out of him. And I think that's going to be the bigger issue.
And Michael, that's something that we've talked about a lot because you look at the ages of Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, Bo Nix, who have been playing college forever. Drake May has had two full years as a true starter. He's got all the physical tools in the world, but a lot of question marks about what he can be, but he hasn't had that same level of experience and development time that some of these other guys have. So take us through how and why you ranked that 4, 5, 6.
Well, I mean, I think, look, May is going to – it's a project. I don't see May coming in and being day one starter. I think it's going to take him some time. I think the game's going to move too fast for May. The same thing with J.J. McCarthy. You know, McCarthy is, to me, scheme specific. And he's a winner. He's a great kid. He does a lot of things really well. You're going to have to groove him in. And I think that's going to be really important. And I think he's one of the guys here that I think one of the things where Jim talks so glowingly about him is because Jim sees him as the player that takes the practice to the field. I think if you coach him, the first play of the Alabama game where he throws the ball, it should have been interception. It was ruled interception on the field. Why he doesn't throw the short route early? They worked that play every single day in practice. He didn't. I mean, that sometimes happens to McCarthy, but on third down, he's very good. And Bo Nix, to me, has got really good feet. He's got the ability to throw the ball underneath and short. He's more, to me, of a second-round talent than he is a first-round. But I understand it's going to be hard to get him in the first round, in the second round. I think he's a rhythm thrower. I think he'd be perfect in a true West Coast game. But once again, I think his athleticism is what's going to carry him and his work habits.
Another great example, as you referenced, of a guy who did not have success in Auburn. It did not work out for him, but boy, did his career change when he went to Oregon finishes his career as the all-time leading passer in NCAA history. And you talk about J.J. McCarthy being a winner. His 27-1 record as a starter, the best by an FBS starting quarterback in over 50 years. We are going to hit the break here. When we come back, we're resetting for hour two on the Lombardi Line. Caitlin Clark's revenge tour after last year's national championship was amazing last night. We'll talk that. We'll talk Final Four and, of course, more NFL news and notes as we go on the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.